is Vermont Edition. I'm Nina Kekin for Jen Lindholm. Last February in Vermont's presidential primary, Bernie Sanders was the big winner. No surprise there. But many were surprised that among Republicans, Donald Trump beat Ohio Governor John Kasich. Trump's string of primary victories, coupled with embarrassing missteps and gaffes, have left many party loyalists shaking their heads. Just this week, Meg Whitman, the Hewlett-Packard chief executive who ran unsuccessfully as a Republican for governor of California in 2010 and who is a major GOP fundraiser, says she'll back Hillary Clinton. Whitman posted on Facebook, "As a proud Republican, casting my vote for president has usually been a simple matter, but this year is different." She said Donald Trump's demagoguery has undermined the fabric of our national character. Other prominent Republicans, like former President George W. Bush and former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, have remained pointedly silent, declining to back Trump as the party's nominee. Today on Vermont Edition, we'll talk about how the Trump campaign is playing here at home, how Vermont Republicans feel about some of the things Trump has said, some of the positions he's taken, and what, if any, impact Trump may be having on Vermont's Republican Party. Listeners, we would love to hear from you on this issue. Are you a proud Republican? What's your take on Donald Trump? Is he just the kind of change you think this country needs? Or does his candidacy worry you? And why? 1-800-639-2211 is the number to call to weigh in. That's 1-800-639-2211. Or you can post your thoughts on our show page at vpr.net. Here to lend some perspectives are Philip Hoxie. He's a rising senior at Middlebury College, and he's vice executive chairman of the Vermont College Republicans. Philip, great to have you on the show today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Chet Greenwood heads the Orleans County Republicans, and Chet was co-chair of the Vermont delegation at the Republican National Convention in Cleveland. And Chet, wonderful to have you on the program.
Thank you very much.
And Laura Benner is from South Burlington. She was also a delegate to the RNC, and she's co-director of social media and communications for the Trump campaign in Vermont. Laura, welcome.
Thank you so much. A pleasure to be here.
So, Chet Greenwood, let me start with you. You were originally a supporter of Ohio Governor John Kasich, but since the primary have come out in support of Donald Trump, and you think the party has come together around him. When you hear about prominent Republicans at the national level who are throwing their support behind Hillary Clinton, and you have the state's most popular Republican and the man the party hopes will be the next governor, Phil Scott, making his disdain of Donald Trump pretty clear, saying he's very concerned about where Trump will lead the country, how concerned are you, Chet, that these fractures within the party won't heal?
Well, I am concerned, and I think it will hurt the party if we don't all come together. Because the alternative is unacceptable to me. At least in Don Trump, he missteps, but he tells it like it is. He's honest. He doesn't have a 35-year history of ethical conduct and selling out to foreign countries for money. He's out front in the public all the time, every day. Hillary's been in hiding. She won't tell us what her stances are. So I think it's going to come together, and the support we've had. We just had the Orleans County Fair, and we had tremendous support for Donald Trump. We had signs in the booth, and it was like a magnet.
Philip Hoxie, as a young Republican becoming active now in party politics, how do you feel about Donald Trump as your party nominee?
Well, I'm a Republican originally from California, and so I really have a lot of qualms with Donald Trump because I don't think he represents the Republican values that I, as a a thoughtful person, think I signed on to. I signed on for a candidate that supports small government, that supports lowering taxes, that supports, protecting the Fourth Amendment, which Donald Trump, wants to pretty much destroy. So I really have a lot of problems, and so I'm not going to vote for him. I'm going to go with many millennials. There was a Harvard Institute of Politics millennial poll that showed that Donald Trump and Gary Johnson are just about even among millennials. And Gary Johnson, I would suspect, has risen since that poll.
So
I'm going to go and vote for the only, elected presidential nominee that was a Republican. I'm going to support who I think I can.
When you talk with other young Republicans, Philip, what are they telling you about Donald Trump?
Well, out of all the people that I've met in Vermont, as far as Castleton, UVM, and Middlebury College, I've only come across one ideological Trump supporter, and I've only come across, you know, five or six of us who are, you know, begrudgingly going to support Donald Trump. But here's the wonderful thing about Vermont politics is that, you know, we can not support Donald Trump, but we can still, you know, work our butts off for Phil Scott, who's running a great campaign for governor.
But you said you weren't going to vote for Trump. Or, you know, Gary Johnson was the candidate that you were talking about. As a conservative, though, it's most likely that it's going to come down to Trump or Hillary Clinton. Wouldn't Trump be a better choice for you in terms of choosing Supreme Court justices? You know, wouldn't he advance conservative policy more than Hillary Clinton would?
Well, here's my concern. Well, first off, as a California Republican, my vote, you know, might as well go into the wind. But so I have the liberty of voting by conscience. But if you're an Ohio Republican or a you know, a swing state Republican, I guess North Carolina, according to RCP, is now a swing state thanks to Trump. But, you know, you'd have a much tougher choice. And the one thing that I will say about Donald Trump is the list of justices that he presented, the Cato Institute, which is a very, you know, it's a very constitutional, conservative, libertarian think tank, actually really liked his list of justices. And so a Republican Senate, if Portman and Ayotte can hold on and Donald Trump is president, you know, we might see a decent Supreme Court that might check some of Donald Trump's Fourth Amendment violating policies, like deporting everybody.
Laura Benner, let me bring you into the conversation here. You have been a Trump supporter from the get-go. What do you like about him? What do you think are the qualities that you want to see him bring to Washington?
Well, I have. I've been a Trump supporter right from the very beginning. The day after he announced his candidacy for president, I was down in Manchester, New Hampshire at his very first rally. I had heard him before on TV several times, and whenever he spoke about current issues, I was always in agreement. And so I was really looking forward to him to announce his candidacy, and when he did, I was thrilled. The thing about Mr. Trump that's so wonderful is he's referred to as the blue-collar billionaire. He's very successful. He works tirelessly. And he relates so well to everyone, even the common worker. He really cares about our country and all of its citizens. That includes the veterans and making sure that they get timely medical care, single moms who need good jobs. I mean, there's so many different things that is just wonderful about him, and he does relate so well. His campaign is a very positive message about economic opportunity, and he had one of his biggest messages is to bring back jobs for Americans where their jobs have been gone overseas, and he wants to bring those jobs back to help families.
You talked about one of the appealing aspects of Trump being his success, the fact that he's such a wealthy businessman, and yet he has not been willing to release his income tax returns so that people can have a more critical look, as other presidential candidates have. Does that trouble you at all, that we may not know how successful he truly is?
Well, it doesn't trouble me right now. I think that this is, you know, something that has happened even in the past where they hold on to the tax returns for a while, and I'm sure that if there's anything important there, it will come out. I'm not worried about that at all. There's so many other issues that are important to the American people.
Listeners,
returns.
Listeners, you can weigh into this conversation by calling 1-800-639-2211. Again, that's 1-800-639-2211. We're talking about how Republicans in Vermont are reacting to Donald Trump's campaign. Let's go to the phone lines now and go to Proctor and take a call from Chad. Hi, Chad. Welcome to the program.
Hi. I just have a comment that I think the Republican Party will be a lot better off when they drop all their social conservatism and the perpetual war. I mean, their fiscal conservatism is very appealing, but their stance on so many social issues, they don't really believe in personal freedom and just economic freedom. And as soon as they drop that, I think they'll appeal to a lot more people. And the other thing is that if you want a successful businessman that made from the bottom up, Gary Johnson's your man. And I think if you look at Johnson and Wells' record from their states, nobody's created more jobs and more fiscally conservative than those two. And, you know, an individual vote won't change our electorate in Vermont, but it might just change the conversation.
Thanks, Chad, for the phone call. Chad, let me ask you. Chad brought up the idea of getting more moderate on some of the social points of view. Vermont has had a long tradition of being more moderate Republican and going a little easier on the social views. Do you see that changing under a Trump presidency?
Well, I think he can work with anybody, but Vermont is moderate. I think Douglas is moderate and Phil Scott is more moderate, and I support Phil Scott tremendously for our next governor. And I think Trump will listen to people, and I think he's a lot more moderate than people give him credit for.
There have been many high-ranking Republicans in the Northeast who are not supporting Trump. Former New Hampshire Senator Gordon Humphreys said this month he's considering voting for Hillary Clinton. Republican Senator Susan Collins of Maine has denounced Trump. Here in Vermont, as we've talked about, Phil Scott has not spoken highly of Trump at all. And as a matter of fact, he's had this to say about Mr. Trump.
I'm really looking for a leader that will pull people together and unite us rather than divide us. And I think that he does just the opposite. He incites that fear and anger in people, and he's good at it. He pushes all the right buttons. But I don't think that's good for the country.
Laura, let me ask you. You were talking about how you think that Mr. Trump relates well to a lot of people. He's likable. You think he brings some fresh ideas. Here you've got Phil Scott, a very well-respected state Republican, saying just the opposite.
Well, two things on this. First is I think that those who are upset with Phil Scott for not supporting Mr. Trump, when they go to the ballot box, they actually will be casting their vote for Phil Scott because the alternative, Sue Minter, just will not work for the best interests of the Vermonters. The second thing is I was bringing up this exact same topic with a friend of mine, Bill Lawrence, who happens to be running for state office for state house in the Underhill area. And he's a fantastic guy and will be a great representative for Vermont. But Bill Lawrence and I were talking about this subject, and he said, well, in November, when Mr. Trump is elected, and in November, when Phil Scott is elected, they will come together for the betterment of Vermont. And I really do agree.
Let me ask you, Chet, if you're upset that Phil Scott has not endorsed Donald Trump.
Well, it bothers me a little bit, but I agree with Laura. I think a lot of people that are outspoken and don't like Trump, some of them are doing it for political reasons because there's other people that don't support Trump. But we've had a lot of people, like at the Barton Fair last week, a lot of people will not vote for Scott because of his commitment against Trump. But I don't agree with that because I'm going to support Phil. But I think Trump will bring this country together. He's a political novice. He says this for, you know, a lot of what he says for reaction from the press. And he's getting a lot of free press out of it. And I really don't think he believes that deep down in.
Philip Hoxie, let me bring you back into the conversation. I'm curious what you think of Republicans who have come out and not endorsed Trump on principle and where you see the balance between party and principle and if that's a threat to the party.
Well, you know, and Governor Romney is my prime example of this. I think, you know, we as Republicans, we're using the party to advance certain ideals. And when the party stops doing that, when they put up somebody like Donald Trump, who, by the way, only won about 35-36% of Republicans in the primary, we really don't see the party advancing our conservative ideals, and we will not support a nominee that fundamentally wants to expand government.
1-800-639-2211, the number to call. Republicans out there, we would like to hear from you. What do you think of Donald Trump's campaign? How are you going to vote this November? Is it affecting how you vote? And how do you think it's going to affect down-ticket races like Phil Scott and local representative and Senate races? We'd like to hear your thoughts. You can join us on our Facebook page or at the Vermont Edition homepage at vpr.net. Let's go to Underhill now and take a call from Ellie. Hi, Ellie. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I wanted to first mention that last year at the Champlain Fair, I asked people as they came up to the Republican booth wanting to sign Trump petition to be on the ballot, Why Trump? And almost every single one of them said, and it was overwhelmingly Trump, said, because he says what I feel. So it was like, it was refreshing to see that there was someone out there that was speaking Vermonter's language. Then the next thing, recently I spoke with Phil Scott about his lack of support for Trump, and he told me it had to do with his father, who was a veteran. And I think that it might be appropriate for us to really talk more about, and I would like to hear what the supporters there for Trump would have to say about what Trump is talking about doing for our vets. That very much needs to be done.
All right, Ellie, thanks for that phone call. Chet, let me ask you about that. You're nodding, listening to what she's saying. Veterans issues, that's been tricky. I mean, Trump has come out and criticized John McCain for not being a war hero because he got caught and spent time in a prisoner of war camp. I mean, he's taken heat for the whole criticism he put on the Muslim family who lost his son in combat.
All right, he's had some missteps, and if somebody's going to attack him, he's going to attack back. That's his mantra. But as far as supporting the veterans, I don't think anybody's going to support him more than Trump. He wants to give the veterans the access to the free health care like everybody else, not just the VA. The VA is a scandal in itself. And if you take Northern Vermont, I'm from the Northeast Kingdom, the vets have to drive to White River. You know, it's a 3-hour down and back drive, and he wants them to be able to go to a local hospital to get treatment. And I think and Hillary hasn't made any claims like that, and I think that's a great asset for veterans. Go to the nearest hospital. Don't, you know, search out a VA hospital.
All right, let's take another phone call now. Let's go to Port Kent, New York, and check in with Fred. Hi, Fred. Welcome to Vermont Edition. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. I would like to mention that we need to focus on the down-ticket races to get a workable Congress in there to give the president, whoever it is, the money to spend to stir the economy. Even President Obama was not able to get as much as they wanted. Maybe they should have tackled that rather than health insurance at the beginning when they were in charge. And right now, I don't think people realize, and that's why you have so many people supporting Mr. Trump and supporting Bernie, is because the Great Recession was really another depression. And with so many jobs leaving the country for whatever reason, in the factories, there's not enough work, especially for, well, there's really not enough jobs.
Fred, are you voting Republican traditionally? Are you a Republican?
Yes, ma'am.
So will you be voting for Mr. Trump?
I'm going to support Hillary. She's in my area. She'll probably win upstate New York. But there's a good conservative element up here. But I would not support Mr. Trump under any circumstances. I just feel it's a scary situation with Mr. Trump.
Interesting. What frightens you the most?
Pardon?
What concerns you the most about a Trump presidency?
Well, obviously, maybe we get more mellow as we age, and so maybe I'm getting more like a Rockefeller Republican, a little bit more relaxed. And like that previous caller who said the Republicans should stop beating all those social issues to death and get out of people's personal lives and work for the country, work the whole nation. We've got so many people that need help. It's just a crying shame.
All right, Fred, I think we've got it. Your phone line was breaking up a little bit, but I appreciate the call. Philip Hoxsey, I want to ask you about the down-ticket races and the fact that you need to get members of Congress nationally as well as in Vermont. What do you think about that, and what do you think about Donald Trump's impact on the down-ticket races?
Well, you know, I'm really worried that Donald Trump is going to have a very bad impact on races like Virginia's 11th District, which is actually a Middlebury graduate, Barbara Comstock, who I'm worried is going to lose her seat because Donald Trump is heading our ticket. And as far as Vermont, I think Phil Scott is going to do a fantastic job as governor, and I think that, you know, I'm looking at this Castleton poll on my computer, and he, you know, has the most name recognition and the most favorability, which, as any political analyst, that's a good spot to be in. So I'm not sure how much it's going to affect Vermont, because Vermont has a history of ticket splitting. In 2008, we voted in Barack Obama and Governor Douglas, and I think in Vermont it'll have less of an effect. But nationally, in states like Virginia, I'm worried that good people could lose their seats.
We're talking about how Republicans are reacting to Donald Trump today on Vermont Edition. Do you love him? Do you hate him? Are you not sure? Donald Trump has upset a lot of Republicans this past year, but many believe Hillary Clinton is just as bad, if not worse. Are you a Republican? We'd love to know what you think of this whole race campaign. Will he get your vote? Why or why not? What kind of impact do you think he may have on the Republican Party here in Vermont? We'll take more of your calls after a short break. This is Vermont Edition. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Nina Keck, and today we're talking about the effect Donald Trump is having on the Republican Party in Vermont. Trump has been a polarizing figure in politics, and many high-ranking Republicans have publicly denounced him. So how is that playing out here in Vermont with down-ticket races? Will they be affected or not? You can call us at 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211, or post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. I'm joined by Chet Greenwood. He's the chair of the Orleans County Republicans, and he was co-chair of the Vermont delegation at the Republican National Convention. Laura Benner was also a delegate to the RNC, and she is co-director of social media and communications for the Trump campaign in Vermont. And joining us by phone from his home in California is Philip Hoxie. He's a rising senior at Middlebury College and is vice executive chairman of the Vermont College Republicans. And Laura, you were nodding your head. I think you wanted to weigh in on one of those calls that just came through, and we had to go to a break. They were talking about down-ticket races. What did you want to add?
Yes, I did want to talk about your last caller who mentioned that he is a Republican but unfortunately is not going to be supporting Donald Trump. I have to say that the vast majority of Republicans are supporting Mr. Trump, our nominee, and in doing so enthusiastically. In addition to that, we have first-time voters who are voting for Mr. Trump, independents, Bernie supporters. I have a lot of friends who are Bernie supporters living here, and they said that they just cannot vote for Hillary Clinton with her decades of scandals and corruption, and that Americans just can't trust her, and they will not be voting for her. So we'll be getting Bernie supporters over to our ticket as well. And there's something new, a new term that's out there. I heard it on the national news the other day, and when I was working at the Champlain Valley Fair this past Saturday, somebody came by and yelled out, "I'm a Trumpocrat." So they're long. They've been Democrats their entire life, but they are going to be voting for Donald Trump.
All right. Well, let's take another phone call. Let's go to Shrewsbury now. Todd's been waiting. Hi, Todd. Go ahead. You're on the show. Hi, Todd. Are you there? All right. We may not have Todd. Let's go to Barry now and talk with Raphael. Hi, Raphael. Go ahead.
Hey, how are you, man?
Raphael, you there?
Yes, I'm there. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. Go ahead. Welcome to the program.
Okay, this is my thing. I am a blue blood Democrat, but I will be voting for Trump.
Well, there you go.
I wanted to vote for Dr. Jill, but if she's not doing good at the poll, I'm not going to waste my vote. I do not want these two hoodlums to go back in the White House.
So you
do not want that.
So it's a trust issue for you? Is that why you don't want to vote for Hillary Clinton?
It's a trust issue, and my trust is based on that. I'm from Haiti. The Clinton Foundation, these people stole all the money for the earthquake. Do you know how many houses in the whole country these people built after receiving so many billion dollars of aid? Six houses.
All right. Raphael, I think we've got your point, and you just confirmed what my guest Laura was saying, that you've got a lot of Democrats or some Democrats out there that are going with Trump, just as you've got some Republicans that may be holding their nose and voting for Hillary Clinton. So interesting. 1-800-639-2211. Martha in Danville posted this. How can your guests speak about what they believe Trump will do based only on his rhetoric? A leader must be qualified by their demonstration of ability and philosophy. Trump merely makes claims and stirs people up emotionally. Obama did the same thing. I see it as irresponsible to just trust someone without a basis. I'm not a Republican or a Democrat, but I vote conservatively when possible. Let me ask, Chet, let me ask you this. Many people have pointed out that Donald Trump is saying a lot of things about growing jobs in the economy, and these are the, you know, we need to change up the trade system. But he's come up very short on specifics. We don't really know what exactly he's going to do. How big of a deal is that? All of the I guess, the vagueness of his campaign. Does that concern you?
Well, being a president isn't a unilateral position, so he has to rely on Congress to help. But nobody can deny the fact that he's been very, very successful building a billion-dollar empire. And, you know, everybody's going to have pitfalls here and there, but his path to being successful.
Well, he's been successful, but he's also had a number of bankruptcies.
Well, individually, he has a number of companies that he runs and manages. A lot of those bankruptcies are where he sells his name or lends his name to the enterprise. But he can run the government the same way. You know, he's not going to run it without a budget. I mean, we've been running without a budget for the last 6 years, and it's been terrible. He can do it efficiently. He's going to do it, and he's going to lower taxes. Hillary says she's going to raise taxes, even on the middle class. So,
but have you seen specifics that say exactly how he's going to lower taxes?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, he's going to cut programs. But one of the ways you raise taxes is create more jobs. You create more jobs, and people pay more taxes.
Laura Benner, you were nodding your head on that.
Yes. One of the things is with the Hillary Clinton campaign is that she's really not out there talking about the issues and the solutions to the problems that we have in our country. Where, to contrast that, Mr. Trump, in addition to his rallies that he has and speaking to the American people, weekly he goes out and gives important meetings where he discusses, and these are televised, the major topics and his solutions to our problems. For example, tonight at 9 p.m., he'll be speaking in Phoenix, Arizona, on immigration and the solutions that he's putting forth to fix that.
It'll be interesting to hear how his meeting with the Mexican heads work out today. That'll be, I'm sure, a very interesting meeting. You're both nodding.
Yes.
I think we're all eager to hear about that.
Right.
Let's talk to Philip Hoxsey. I want to bring you back into the conversation. You know, we've had a couple of callers call in, Phil, where they've talked about, you know, I'm Democrat and I'm voting for Trump, and I'm Republican and I'm certainly not voting for Trump. So it's kind of confusing. How many Republicans are you talking to these days that are really conflicted about what they're going to do and really unsure what they're going to do in November?
Well, Nina, I'd like to step back for a second and take a look at some numbers. So the polling in Vermont right now is that Clinton only has 39% and Trump has 17%. So I'm not sure where the swaths of Democrats that are turning out to vote for Trump are coming from, but I don't see them in 17%. So I just don't understand how Vermonters can look at this and say Trump's going to do well in Vermont or nationally. He's looking at, if you look at the Real Clear Politics polls, he's likely going to get about 154 electoral votes. That's a sweep. I mean, I just don't see Trump winning, but I do see a avenue for Governor Johnson to take some ground. He's not going to win many states. He might win his home state in New Mexico and Utah, but there are clearly a lot of people who are really upset. And I think they're upset on both sides, as we heard from our caller who talked about the Clinton Foundation in Haiti. I mean, Hillary Clinton should walk through Vermont with 67% of the vote, and she's not. So I think a lot of people are really upset, and I would push that people really look at Governor Johnson, who has a very good track record of conservative governance, of being moderate on social issues. He's way to the left of me on social issues, but he cuts government. He wants to get government out of people's lives. He's really going to lower taxes. He's going to lower spending. And Governor Weld did the same thing in Massachusetts. So I agree that you can't really, you know, show what people are going to do based on what they say. And Trump said a lot of stuff, often conflicting. And, you know, I'm just looking for a guy who's governed his home state successfully, which is a blue state like Vermont, and left them with a surplus with new roads, bridges, hospitals, etc. So that's my feeling on it. I don't know where these Trumpocrats are coming from. I've never met one.
Let me go back to the phone lines, bring in a couple more callers. Let's go to Shrewsbury. I think we've got Todd back on the line. Todd, go ahead.
Yes. Good. Actually, I was going to say good afternoon, and thank you for accepting my call. My credentials in this, I guess, are that I've been a registered Republican for the better part of a quarter of a century, and for the most part have largely shared the views espoused by the Republican Party. I consider myself a constitutional conservative, and on almost every issue would definitely be considered a social conservative as well. But I have to confess, I am nothing less than appalled that the Republican Party has chosen Donald Trump as its preeminent representative to the world, as well as the United States population. You know, if one takes the time to study Mr. Trump's character, he reveals himself to be completely unsuited to the role of the most powerful office of the most powerful country of the world. I mean, I encourage the listeners to take the time, study the class action suits that have been brought against Trump University, for example. Look at the firsthand statements, not just of complainants, but also of employees who worked for Mr. Trump, his statements on women. You know, he just has no character, in my opinion, that renders him suitable for the job.
Tom, let me ask you this. I want to ask you, if you know, you mentioned you typically vote conservative. Does this change the way going forward you look about or you feel about being part of the Republican Party?
Absolutely. And I have a confession to make. I'm so appalled that I am most likely going to leave the Republican Party. I cannot show my face among my friends, both Republican and liberal, and identify myself with the party who has chosen this man as their flag bearer. I just can't do it.
All right. Well, thanks for the call, Todd. I appreciate it. Eric posted online, Laura Benner claims that Sanders supporters have gone over to Trump. The truth is that 90% of Bernie Sanders supporters say they are going to vote for Hillary Clinton. I don't know where those numbers are coming from either way, but interesting. Laura Benner?
I haven't heard any numbers. I just know of people in the Burlington area that I know and know well have said that there's no way they're going to vote for Hillary. They don't trust her. They don't like her. They don't want scandals in the White House anymore. And therefore, they will do their civic duty and will be voting for Donald Trump.
Well, and I guess I just read that national polls do show it's about 90% that are going to be voting for Hillary Clinton, former Bernie Sanders supporters. Well, we'll have to leave it there. And I want to thank all of my guests. Philip Hoxie attends Middlebury College and is vice executive chairman of the Vermont College Republicans. Philip, thanks so much for taking time to talk with us today.
Thank you so much, Nina.
Chet Greenwood heads the Orleans County Republicans. He was co-chair of the Vermont delegation at the Republican National Convention in Cleveland. Chet, great to have you on the program today.
Thank you, Nina. Pleasure to be here.
And Laura Benner is from South Burlington. She was also a delegate to the RNC, and she's co-director of social media and communications for the Trump campaign in Vermont. Laura, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Just ahead, we'll talk about a new Thursday night literary event in Brattleboro that book lovers of all sorts will want to attend. We'll hear more after a short break. This is Vermont Edition. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Nina Keck. Feel like maybe you've done one too many book clubs? Don't like having to read other people's choices by the next meeting? Let's cue the lounge music. How about a different option to introduce you to other book lovers? One where you could just mix it up and mingle with authors, poets, and other readers. That's what's happening at something called the Book Lounge in Brattleboro. It got started earlier this summer and happens every Thursday night. Dee Dee Cummings is one of the co-founders of the Book Lounge, and she's also the publisher of Green Writers Press, and she joins me now. Dee Dee, thanks for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Do you like that lounge music?
I love the lounge music. It's great.
So Brattleboro has a long literary history and a plethora of bookshops. The Brattleboro Literary Festival has been going on since 2002, and Brattleboro, I think, was one of Rudyard Kipling's favorite places on earth.
That's true.
So talk about how all of that helped play into the creation of the Book Lounge.
Yeah, there's a rich literary tradition here, Nina, as you know. And, you know, I moved here from living in Boston. I lived in Cambridge, and I worked at Little Brown and Company. And I came up to the book press to check a book. I was on press, and I fell in love with the town. And I think there were 5 independent bookstores at the time, which is crazy. You know? And so anyway, we have a lively community here, writers, editors, readers, poets. And I got together with one of the owners of Duo Restaurant, a dear friend of mine, Stephanie Bonin. She and her husband own a very wonderful relatively new restaurant right on the corner of Main Street and High Street. And just above in the Brooks House, which is an amazing renovation in Brattleboro, Rudyard Kipling used to hold court and play poker up on the top floor. So there's a, you know, maybe Rudyard Kipling's memory is seeping down through the upper levels. But Steph and I got together, and I adored her late mother, Betsy Bonin, who was the owner of the Bookseller right on Main Street. And we dedicated the book lounge in the memory to the memory of Betsy and now Pierre Bonin, who passed away about a week ago. And they were just an amazing couple. You'd walk into their store and Betsy would say, "Dee Dee, oh, I've got a new historical fiction. I think you'll like it." You know, they knew what people were reading. And so it's just a great way to kind of get back away from the digital world and away from our computers and into a group. And we meet every Thursday.
Yeah,
and
describe what a typical Thursday night book lounge is like for people who haven't had a chance to attend.
Okay, so usually I'm there and I have a guest, or there's a wonderful local editor. Her name is Jessica Swift, and she happily fills in for me if I'm away, so I have a break. And people gather in the corner, in the back of Duo. There's a whole separate area called The Lounge, and they have wonderful jazz on Friday nights.
So there's lounge music.
Well, we don't have lounge. We have, like, background music on their CD. But, you know, we Thursday night, it's a little quiet, and Steph and I thought that would be a good night for people to just meet and mingle. And the whole idea is to have a very casual place where we can go and talk about books, which for many people, it's a passion. And, you know, a lot of us haven't been able to really join a book group that either due to time constraints or, as you mentioned, you know, you might not want to read, you know, something that is dictated to you, but you love to talk about books. And so Steph and I were talking about what we were reading, and we really clicked. And then we decided to do this and use the back of the lounge at the restaurant.
So, Didi, when you have these events, I thought I read that they were kind of structured but loosely so. So is there a theme each week or a skill set that people come in to talk about?
Yeah. Usually the beginning, it's more of a social time. And, you know, there's not really that much alcohol being consumed, a la Ernest Hemingway or anything, no mojitos. But, you know, there is a bar, and, you know, sometimes people will get something to eat, and we sit in these wonderful lounge. They're like, you know, couches in the corner, and also couple of wingback chairs. It's very loungy, you know. And there are tables, but we tried that once and it was terrible. So we just fan out from the corner and we form this kind of semicircle around, I guess, the host, which is usually me, or with a guest. For example, after mingling and talking and catching up with people, like we're starting to know each other, you know, I'll introduce a guest. For example, we had Castle Freeman, who's a wonderful author from Newfane, Vermont. He came down and talked about his work, and people were able to ask him questions, such as the sale of his wonderful novel, Away With Me, which he sold to Anthony Hopkins, which is now a movie called Blackway. And, you know, we were able to really kind of get behind the scenes with a writer, and some well-known writers, but also some new writers or emerging writers, you know, can come and you know, talk, but it's not like a reading or a speech or anything. It's more interacting.
Well, writing can be very solitary. I know when I'm working in Rutland, I'm often spending hours on my computer and I'm not doing novels or anything, but, you know, just it's not often without much interaction. So is that what you're trying to offer writers and lovers of books, a way to come together and socialize as well as work on some skills?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, as a publisher and a writer myself, it's just a way to create this extended community. And it's working out so beautifully. And I'm really thrilled that it's becoming a thing.
How many people have been coming the last few Thursdays?
Average about, you know, anywhere from 15 to 20 people average. We've had more and we've had a few less. So it's, you know, but it's growing, which is really exciting.
What would you say to someone who finds this idea intriguing but might be a little intimidated by the thought of coming?
Oh, well, all are welcome. We have librarians, booksellers, poets, writers, readers, and everyone is welcome. And we go around the room at the beginning and we just say our names and why are we here? And people, there are, you know, I'm pretty outgoing, but, you know, there are people who are very shy, and it really seems to be an accommodating place where all are welcome. And I haven't really had any complaints. And, you know, it's evolving. And the nice thing about it is that the book loungers are creating it themselves.
And just briefly, Didi, mm-hmm. what do you think people get out of it, both the writers and just the readers?
Beautiful. Well, I've heard a lot of people say that they feel like life slows down during that, you know, 2 hour time. And often, like Tim Weed, a local novelist from Putney, he read from Ursula Le Guin. And we all just I looked around the room and people had their eyes shut and they were listening. And so it's so beautiful to get away from, you know, to get into the analog, away from the digital, and to hold a book in your hand and listen to someone read to you. And I think
that's pretty
people,
awesome.
Yeah. People seem to really just, you know, they don't get as stressed out in their normal lives when they have the book lounge.
Well, Didi, thank you so much for being on the program and telling us about it today.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Didi Cummings is one of the co-founders of the Book Lounge. She's also the publisher of Green Writers Press and an occasional commentator on VPR. We end today on a musical note with Timeline, a series produced by James Stewart of VPR Classical. In each episode, James introduces us to events, characters, and concepts that shaped Western music. Today, James discusses the work of Austrian composer Gustav Mahler.
For centuries, the region of Austria-Germany produced remarkably talented composers. You can follow a chain of names from Haydn to Mozart, from Beethoven to Mendelssohn and Brahms. One of the last great composers of this line was Gustav Mahler. His visionary direction of the Vienna Opera influenced the future of that organization, as well as many others around the world. His music reinvigorated the symphony and expanded the possibilities of the orchestra. Mahler was the second of 14 children born to a successful tavern owner in Englau. He began to take lessons on the piano at an early age and gave his first public performance when he was 10. At 15, Gustav was sent to Vienna to study at the conservatory. It was there that he fell in love with composition and conducting. During these formative years, he was greatly influenced by Wagnerian opera and the philosophy of Friedrich Nietzsche. After graduating from university, Mahler took up various conducting jobs in locations in Austria and Germany. His travels allowed him to develop longtime friendships with Richard Strauss and Sigmund Freud. Though he had a reputation of being strong-willed and demanding of his orchestras, Gustav Mahler became the virtuoso conductor of his time. His creative life followed the rigor of his performance schedule. He would sketch out his music during the break of the summer months and orchestrate these ideas during the theater season. As a composer, he was an inspiration to a new generation, especially those composers who make up the second Viennese school, Schoenberg, Berg, and Webern. His most influential works are his monumental 9 symphonies. He left a 10th unfinished. These symphonies were made possible by the inspiration and support of Mahler's wife, Alma Schindler Mahler, who was a talented composer herself and a member of an influential circle of artists. A wave of anti-Semitic protest forced Mahler's resignation from the Vienna Opera in 1907. This was also the year he lost his eldest daughter to scarlet fever and was diagnosed with a heart condition that greatly limited his physical life. Nevertheless, he took up a position with the Metropolitan Opera in New York. He spent the next few years living part-time in New York City and in Europe. He fell gravely ill in 1911 and made his last trip to Vienna. There, he passed away on May 12th, just a few weeks before his 51st birthday.
And you can find out more about Gustav Mahler and follow James Stewart's timeline at vpr.net/classical. Colonel Matthew Birmingham took over as director of the Vermont State Police just over a year ago. Tomorrow on the program, we'll speak with him about battling the state's opiate abuse crisis, bias-free policing, and his priorities for the force. You can send your questions or comments for Colonel Birmingham to vermontedition@vpr.net and listen tomorrow at noon. And we always welcome your feedback on what you hear on Vermont Edition and topics that you'd like us to cover in the program. Email your thoughts to Vermont Vermont Edition at vpr.net or like our Facebook page and join the community of listeners who engage in the show there every day. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Singeri, Sam Gail Rosen, and Meg Malone, with production assistance from Sarah Matthews. Liam Connors directed the program today. Our executive producer is Patty Daniels, and our theme music was composed by Grace Potter and the Nocturnals. I'm Nina Kack. Thanks for listening.